just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 655. My name, as it sometimes is Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my co-host extraordinaire, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to both of us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do on colder days at koop.org. Don't go away.
Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah. It takes two, baby. It takes two. King ain't a king without the power behind.
It is Wednesday, February 9th. Oh my God, no, it's February 23rd, 2022. On the show today, we have Broadway Across America's Tootsie, and we'll be talking to Ken Webster and get the second half of our Hyde Park Theater interview. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, and Punxsutawney Phil. We'll be back.
Lancelot had Guinevere, Mrs. Claus.
It takes two, Nicole Shiro.
I was like, first of all, I was jamming Kim Simpson was rocking it today. And then it went straight into our theme song. It still had me going from Kim Simpson. And then you top it off with some hairspray. And I was like, I just had some magical moments going.
We hairsprayed it. It takes two because we are in the palindrome week. And yesterday was 222 Tuesday.
What day was it, Lisa?
222 Tuesday. And now all this week the date is a palindrome.
Isn't that crazy? I find palindromes fascinating.
Able was I ere I saw Elba.
where's the rim shot?
Yeah,
right.
So we have most of our stuff is pre-recorded today. We have absolutely no time to talk. I do want to thank Kim Simpson, as you did as well, in his wonderful show of the International Folk Bazaar. It was just regular.
It was really good, though. I was like bebopping in my seat. So
it's good to bebop in your seat.
It is good to bebop in my seat. I was bebopping away and enjoying it.
So
and
we literally
bebopped right into our show.
We did. We literally have 6 minutes to talk and a whole bunch of things to talk about. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm just gonna basically tell people to go to offstageonair.com to see the whole articles that we would have talked about, because we're not gonna be able to get to everything.
You have some good stuff on the list. Which one's you getting to?
I do, and I don't know what I want to talk about. What's right up here on my computer is Space Dogs, because you got to love Space Dogs.
Yeah, it's like space. We love space, first of all, Lisa. You and I have a little thing about space.
We do. Well,
and we have a little thing about dogs, so then Space Dogs.
That's true. MCC has a new show out. It's a musical, and it's called Space Dogs, and it's about dogs in space. Its creators are Nick Blaymeyer, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that correctly, and Van Hughes, directed by Ellie Heyman. And it's the story of Laika, which is the dog that the Soviet scientists put in space and unfortunately did not make it back alive.
No, I was about to say it's not really a happy ending, but I mean, we've had pigs in space. Let's get the dog.
Well, but this show says it's hopelessly cheesy, packed with dad jokes, puns, silly accents, and even a doggy beauty contest. I'm telling you, that's my kind of show.
I was like, that kind of just summed up my cup of tea for an afternoon.
Yeah, so it's got a good review, and the dogs are actually voiced by people, but the dog is a plushie.
I saw that. which I think actually works from what I've seen so far. I think the real dog would have not worked with the whole shtick they got going.
I think it's a shtick. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. But parts of the story is told from Laika's perspective, from doggy diary entries.
I love it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and it is a musical. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It sounds interesting, and it sounds unique. And you know what? I think it'll get people to go really want to go back and learn about real Laika and what went on. And I just, you know, when it makes you leave the theater and still be talking about it or research or learn more or find out stuff, that excites me.
Yeah. Well, it got a good review by Maya Phillips from the New York Times. And it is playing off Broadway through March 13th. So folks, you got some time to go to the airport and do that. So I will tell people to go to check out. This opened because we were pre-recorded last week. We were not able to get a lot of the more current things in. But Black No More is an off-Broadway show that opened as well. It looks amazing. It is another musical at the Pershing Square Signature Center. It is directed by Scott Elliott with a book by John Ridley, who wrote 12 Years a Slave. Boy, I cannot speak. 12 Years a Slave. Music is many, but one of them is one of your friends, Tarek Trotter of The Roots.
Oh, that's awesome sauce.
Yeah, so some of the, it also stars Brandon Victor Dixon, who did not get a great review
in
the Times.
I just adore him.
Yeah, well, who doesn't like it? But it's...
Well, he's also, he sparkles inside and out. That's just, I don't know how else to describe him. He does.
Well, we can't talk about it a lot. It did get a good notice. I believe it's a critic's pick, and you can get that at the New York Times, nytimes.com, or a link at offstageonair.com. We have 2 minutes. Oy vey, Mir. I do have to talk about this, which looks interesting. The Civility of Albert Cashier. There's going to be a staged concert reading of it. It tells of a real-life transgender person that joined in the Civil War battle. Mm-hmm. It is a musical. It's going to be done at the Players Theater. What I found interesting here is they are touting, let me see if I can find the actual words that they said. I don't see it, but basically they're saying this is the very first show in New York to be an all-trans creative team and all-trans cast.
That's exactly almost word for word how they wrote it,
yep.
If I remember correctly.
But what that means is Austin wins again because Ground Floor Theater did Transom before the pandemic with an all-trans and non-binary creative team and cast. So la. But it looks interesting, so much that we might see this show in Austin in the relative near future.
I think it would be great. I think it'd be great for audiences. Another one that you leave wanting to learn more and go back and learn hits. I like things that touch upon somewhat real life and make you.
I do as well.
That's
and
me.
This is a 4-person cast musical. It's got sort of a country western flair to it.
Yeah, that got me excited because I like that.
Yeah, see, and
stuff.
that was a
turn
off. That
was the
me.
One thing that I was like, Lisa's not going to like. It's so funny when I read certain shows and I know what I'm drawn to, and I'm like, oh, I like got to hear from Lisa on that one.
Yeah, they call it a folk country musical. So it was written by GLAAD nominee, and that's AA GLAAD, J. Paul Durante and Keaton Wooden. So that should be interesting. And when we go out in 45 seconds, we'll hear a little piece of music from it.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. I do want to say that I want to get a panel here talking about, there's another article, and you can find a link in offstageonair.com at American Theater talking about Jewish casting.
I saw this one.
And representation, and there's just so much to talk about there. And it's a lot of different opinions, and I would love to get a group together to talk about it.
Ooh, I have some ideas for that group. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So
I think
with
that's cool too.
With that, we've got to go to break. We're going to hear a song called Brothers from The Civility of Albert Kasher by J. Paul Detrani. And with that, we will be right back. Don't go away.
We've been walking this long, long road, mile after mile and day after day, till the end when our story's been told, brothers in arms will stay.
And with that, we're back. You there, Nicole?
I am.
Oh, I expected you to say something and then you didn't.
Well, did you want me to say stuff during that? Because I wanted to pipe in.
Well, you probably could have. So we're going to just jump right into our first interview, which is Peyton Riley with the Broadway Across America national tour of Tootsie, which, other than Hamilton back in December, is the first time we're kind of back on in the Bass Concert Hall.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Very
excited. I like
saying
the word Tootsie, by the way.
Who doesn't like to say Tootsie?
It's a fun word to say.
Tootsie, goodbye. Tootsie. But anyway,
Tootsie.
Peyton was very charming and a wonderful guest. Shall we listen to her?
Yes, let's listen to Peyton.
Here she is.
Oh my God, how lucky are we to be sitting here with Peyton Riley, who plays Sandy Lester in the national tour of Tootsie, now playing at Bass Concert Hall. Peyton, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I am so thrilled to have you here as well. Now, we're pre-recording this. You're actually in what, Memphis or?
I'm in Memphis right now.
Memphis.
And it is rainy today.
Well, it's perfectly sunny here in Austin, so that's
what
you have
I'm
to look forward
to.
So I have to do a quick tangent. My audience gets this of me. I am a big fan of Texas barbecue, and I went to Memphis once, and they took us to Memphis barbecue, and as I was all ready to hate it, it was delicious.
Oh, boy. I thought so, you were about to say, no, you got to come here and have our barbecue.
Well, you do. Texas, some people love it, some people hate it, but I will defend Texas barbecue with my last breath.
What do you think is the big difference between Memphis barbecue and Texas barbecue?
I don't remember, but I do know that I do know that Texas does a lot of beef, so we're known for our brisket and our beef ribs. And Memphis deals with pork, and I believe
pork.
The sauce is slightly different. It's not like North Carolina. So that's it. But I'm so happy you're on my show, Barbecue Today.
We actually, it's like that show Hot Wings, where we just try different samples of different barbecue and we decide which one we like the best.
I'm all for that. I don't know that show, but I'm going to get a subscription to it. Now, you are playing Sandy Lester in Tootsie. I have not seen the show yet. So I'm very thrilled. It's rare that I interview someone on a show that I have not seen before. So I'm very looking forward to seeing Tootsie come in because it just opened in New York in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
There was something that went on between 2020 and 2021. I'm not really familiar with what it was.
A little something, something.
A little something, something. But here you are. You're on the road. You're traveling
Finally,
around.
Yes.
And you're playing like the anti-ingenue, if you will.
Yeah. I'll tell you a little bit about Sandy. She's the best part of the show, and I'm a little biased.
Of course.
She's super neurotic. She's a wannabe actress, just like our male lead, who is a struggling actor as well. But he's struggling because he's super hard to work with, and no one wants to hire him. I would be struggling because I'm just not very good. And that's kind of a problem. So, you know, she's super in love with him. Michael is his name. I come in and I'm, you know, constantly asking for his help and auditions and, you know, his guidance. And that's how the show gets rolling. I come in like in a storm. Every time I enter, it's like a snowstorm. It's wild. And I ask him to help me with an audition and I do a terrible job. And then he shows me what I should be doing. And my line is, "See, you're even a better woman than I am." And there, that clicks it for him. He decides he's going to dress up as a woman and go audition for the parts. And you'll never guess. He gets it.
He does. And what's good about this, or what's it? Well, I think it's good versus the movie. In the movie, of course, the character was a turned into a soap opera star.
Right.
And in this case, it's not that, is it?
No. And it's been a great way to incorporate it to the stage, to take that movie that everyone loves and how can we make it, you know, work on the stage. And that's by taking him, not auditioning for a soap opera, but auditioning for a Broadway musical. And then we're able to incorporate a lot of song and dance through that because they're doing a show within the show.
Yeah, it's Juliet something. Juliet's Nurse.
Juliet's Kirk. It's a musical continuation of Romeo and Juliet.
Well, that's great. Now, in the movie, Terry Garr played your role. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. It's been fantastic to watch her and then watch the woman who played the part on Broadway before me, Sarah Stiles. I have watched them so many times. I've taken so much from them and learned so much from them, but then I've made the character my own. And she's a bundle of fun. I mean, she's got all the funny lines. She's super neurotic. She's super crazy, but lovable at the same time.
Yep. Yep. So that's great. It sounds like a lot of fun to do. Y'all have been on the road for how long now?
Since September. So that's...
however many.
I'm no mathematician.
No, I flunked math.
I sing and dance for a living.
And you've got like 7 or 8 more cities to go.
We're done in June, and we'll see if we're done in June.
Okay, I'd like to tell my radio audience that Peyton just did air quotes.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Oh yeah, I forget they can't see us.
No, they can't see us. Well, that's exciting. Now, we were talking a little bit before. I'm going to go stop talking about the show. We're going to get back to it. But we were talking before we went on that you are a Michigander.
Sure am.
You and your fiancé.
We hold up our hand. Yeah, me and my fiancé are from Michigan. Different parts, but we met in college. We both went to school in Michigan.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I'm a big fan of Michigan, as we discussed, as my family's from Michigan. And I used to spend my summers there. But that's great. How does it feel being a Michigander? And you live in New York now, correct?
We live in New York, and we've lived there for about 7 years. So I'm teetering the edge of becoming a real New Yorker. But there's this Midwestern part of me that's just way too nice to everyone. I do the Midwestern, all the time. And I call soda pop. And that's my giveaway.
See,
I know you want to pop, and they're like, ew, where are you from?
No, that's wrong. And my listeners will know that in Texas, everything is Coke. So it's like...
that's right. You want
Can I have... What kind of Coke? Oh, root beer. Okay, thanks. Right. I'm going to have a root beer Coke. Yeah, that's pop. So I have someone who lived in New York for a long time and lived in Chicago, have family in Michigan. I grew up saying Coke. I refuse to say pop. The proper way to call it is soda. Which is
soda
the way we
is
do it in New York. Correct.
I learned my lesson very quickly. One of my first jobs in New York, I worked behind the counter service. And I said, do you want a pop? And I got roasted so hard for so long. I have trained myself to say soda.
Yeah. And it's the better way to do it. I will say. It is.
My dad works for Pepsi. He's worked at Pepsi for 30-something years. And he calls it pop. So who am I to say that the professional is wrong?
Well, I do have to tell you that, you know, you do have to respect your dad and what he stands for.
Thank you.
So this is a real, the show Tootsie, the movie was great. So the show is supposed to be, it was up for a slew of awards. It won, I think Santina Fontana won for best actor. So I know that my listeners are going to want to see it at Bass Concert Hall here in Austin. Have you been to Austin before?
I have not. And I'm so excited to get there.
What are you looking forward to doing, seeing, or eating while you're here?
Well, as we talked about the barbecue. And I also heard that there's this fabulous bike and walking path around a park around there. And I'm really excited about that, doing some biking and hiking. And I have one of my best friends is from Texas. So she's from San Antonio, which we're going very soon as well. But she said she's going to send me a list of recommendations while we're in Austin as well. And you got to give me some places while we're here.
Well, I will. Of course, I'd recommend Ground Floor Theater as the most premier place to go. But that's
never heard of it.
Well, you will. yes, the trails here, there's some wonderful trails. There's a trail around what some Austinites call a lake. I call a river. And it's
what's
Lady
the
Bird
lake
called? Lady
Bird
Lake.
I was thinking because the movie Lady Bird. That's right.
Yeah. Well, not because of the movie Lady Bird, because of the first lady, Lady Bird, which the movie Lady Bird was named after.
Yes. I meant I had saw the name of it and it reminded me of the movie and there I should have remembered it.
And I call it the Colorado River. But there's also the hike and bike trail on the, oh my gosh, I just forgot the name of the trail, but it's out.
Are you even from there?
No. No. So good. Well, I'm excited to have you here. I'm very excited to see the show. I will be there, I believe, on opening night here in Austin.
We are so excited to have you. We're so excited to just bring the show to Texas. We did a show in Houston, and to say it went over well would be an understatement. So we love Texas. We can't wait to get there.
Great. Well, I'm going to talk about one last thing before we go on, and I know this has just been a very stream of consciousness interview. You know, we deal a lot, you know, we talk a lot about COVID mitigation and things like that. Mm-hmm. How has that been for you as a performer on the road? And what kind of COVID protections are they doing?
Our company, as well as the venues that we're going to in each state, have been so wonderful about keeping us safe. And, you know, getting tested a lot, obviously, is the main bit. But we try to stay in our own circles. We're constantly wearing face masks, face shields, doing everything we can to protect ourselves. And each venue is different, too, whether their patrons are masked or if they, you know, need to show proof of vaccination. We're also all vaccinated in the show. So, you know, we're doing our best to stay safe. And the company does a really good job of making us feel safe.
Great. Well, I'm so happy to have you on the show. I'm so happy to, I cannot wait to see it next week, or next week for me, this week for my listeners. The whole pre-recording thing is just bad for my brain. But
especially
Peyton Riley,
I'm in a new place every week, so I cannot keep it straight half the time.
Yeah. I have been there in my younger days. I am no longer there. Peyton Riley, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Wonderful. I should tell my listeners that Tootsie is playing at the Bass Concert Hall February 22nd through 27th. For more information, austin.broadway.com.
I'm trying to take it slowly. I'm trying to be my best. I'm trying to be more holy, less bitter.
What a wonderful interview that was. I really enjoyed it. We are back. I'm going to jump right into our next interview. But before that, I did want to talk about what's happening at St. Ed's. You know, we have some wonderful theater schools here in Austin, Texas, and one of those is St. Edward's University. Another one is a very obscure university called University of Texas, and of course, down south in San Marcos, Texas State has is one of the top musical theater schools in the nation right here in Central Texas. So who says we don't have things going on here? But at St. Ed's, starting, oh my gosh, and I did not write the dates down, but I believe it is playing starting this weekend for 2 weeks at the Mary Moody Northern Theater, the 25th annual Putnam Valley Spelling Bee is happening. I know I have tickets. I'm going a week from today on Wednesday. So should be fun. Lots of good people in it and lots of good students in it doing good student-y thing. With that, we're going to take a break. We're going to hear a little bit about the spelling rules of the Spelling Bee. And then we're going to come back and hear the last bit, the last half of the Hyde Park Theater interview with Ken Webster. We'll be back.
Misspell a word.
We will ring
the bell.
So we're going to jump right into the last part of our interview with Ken Webster. We had talked about the previous prior to him getting there, and it was called Frontera, which led into the Frontera Fest. So we're going to jump right back in. We're going to kind of come in the middle of it, so you'll figure it out as we get there. Let's listen to that interview. Here it is.
You know, of course, we know Hyde Park Theater, but you also have the annual Frontera Fest. Did Vicky and Jason and company create that festival, or is that a Ken Webster edition?
Oh, no, the Frontera Fest was created by Vicky and Jason and Annie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was smaller in those days. It was, there were less entries. The festival only ran 4 weeks instead of five. There was no long fringe in the beginning, and there was no Mi Casa Es Su Teatro in the beginning, but those begin, they develop those as the years passed. And then Christy Moore of Scriptworks and myself kind of inherited the festival. Christy has been the Frontera Fest producer since 2002. And that 2002 was the first one that Christy and I worked on together, and done quite a few since then, but not the last two, because there was a pandemic.
Oh, I know. I know it very well. So I find it interesting. So I didn't realize, I thought you had been with Hyde Park a little longer than you have been. So we're, you know, you actually, I probably credit myself because I came to Austin around the time that you were offered the job as artistic director. And how was that for you? Take yourself back to that time. How did you feel about picking up the mantle and being the artistic director of Hyde Park Theater, or Frontera at Hyde Park for Theater?
Oh, I was very excited, but also terrified to finally run my own theater space. I had sort of run a theater space back in the early 80s called Fifth Street Playhouse, which used to be called Theater in the Rye. Then it became Fifth Street Playhouse, and I got paid a smooth $50 a week to produce plays there and cast them and pick scripts and stuff like that. And I thought I was hot stuff making $50 a week to do theater in a 54 seat theater. And now I've graduated. I've graduated to running a 70 to 75 seat theater.
Yeah, just keep working. You can get bigger and bigger.
That's right.
So what if you were able to just personify or talk about the theater when it was Frontera at Hyde Park, and then what were your goals once you took over?
First of all, just about everybody in town was inspired by Vicky's work. I know I certainly was. She was doing such great stuff, such great new scripts, and using great actors like Jason and Annie and others. So it really invigorated me as a theater artist. I was very excited by the work that they were producing, and fortunate enough to be in some of the productions, and then fortunate enough to rent the venue for my Subterranean Theater Company at that time. But Vicky and I, our taste in plays is a little different. That's one of the reasons why the board of directors and myself, we changed the name of the theater back to simply Hyde Park Theater again. We kept the Frontera Fest Festival, of course, which is perhaps the greatest arts incubator in town.
It's certainly, you know, it's especially the Short Fringe is just, it is so lively and so fun and involves so many different people. It's really a gem in our theater canon here in Austin.
Yeah, and every night, just about every night over the last 25, 26 years, each night there's five totally different shows that don't resemble each other at all.
True. I mean, you always say if you don't like it, just stick around. Wait 20 minutes, it'll be something different.
Yes, yes.
So how would you characterize the difference between what was Vicky doing versus what you wanted to do, like in 2002 when you took over?
My taste in plays was a little bit more realistic. There were several plays that she'd produced that I adored. But there were some shows that I wanted to do that I don't think she would have been as excited about. I was so excited to have my own venue to work at and to be able to select the plays and select the casts and have a roof over my head and not have to worry about renting a theater because I had access to one. And I wanted it to be a venue. I wanted it to continue to be a venue that could be a home for other theater companies that didn't have their own venue, and that we've continued that over the, I guess, yeah, my 20th anniversary running the theater was last year, so we didn't really have a party.
We'll have one next year. Right. So you have, I mean, currently you have a good relationship with Street Corner Arts and
Capital T Theater. It's been several years that Capital T Theater, Street Corner Arts, and Scriptworks have been our regular renters. And it's and we actually have our own particular slots. I produce three shows a year, and we produce Frontera Fest. Capital T has been doing three shows a year. Street Corner has been doing two shows a year. And Scriptworks does the Out of Ink 10-Minute Play Festival every year.
Sure. So you had mentioned that, once upon a time in music theater, the building itself had an open ceiling, and then it had somebody put in a drop ceiling, and then it's open again. Talk about the physical structure and some of the changes. Did you make any changes yourself when you came into the venue itself to make it better? Okay.
Yes, we over the years, our lighting equipment has become much more sophisticated, our light mm-hmm. boards and our lighting equipment. In the very early days, when Lynn Alice opened the place, it was coffee can lights, a lot of coffee can lights.
With those little dimmers that with the round dimmers that you turn like this.
Yeah, the rheostats, yeah. Mm-hmm. We got rid of the false ceiling over the stage. We've got a really excellent light board. Was fortunate enough to run into Mark McKell, who's able to transform our tiny little space into sets that you would think would be impossible to fit in this stage.
So here you are, you're the artistic director of Hyde Park Theater. And, you know, that can be, I've never taken over a theater myself. I've run a few theaters, but I've always been mine from the beginning. So I kind of think it's got to be daunting to step into a situation, especially with a board that you did not, you know, create. So you're dealing with a group of people and trying to create a theater that is based on your vision versus your predecessor's vision. Did you get a lot of support from the board and staff?
I did, very much so. In fact, I had a couple of real champions on the board, including Paul Alvarado Dykstra. I think he was probably instrumental in me getting the job. He was familiar with the shows that I did in the venue with my Subterranean Theater Company group. And he was a big fan of our work, and Margaret Shaw also had seen a lot of our shows. She was the board president at the time, and the board was fantastic. When I first took over, though, we were meeting a lot. We were meeting every month.
Okay.
They were fantastic, and they realized that it was going to be a little different. The work that we were going to do was going to be a little different from when Vicky was running the place, but similar. We had some similar sensibilities. A lot of the shows that I love, Vicky loves, and vice versa. They were fantastic. They made the transition really easy.
Are there any people from that time period that are still around and involved with Hyde Park Theater?
John Hakenios was on the board that hired me, and he is still on our board. He was board president for quite a while, but Michael Trejo is board president now.
I did not know that.
Yes.
I did see, is when I like glanced through your history, he's one of the early people that were working with you. I saw him his name as an actor in one of the shows that you did.
He was in some of our Subterranean shows and some of the early Hyde Park shows, yes.
That is wonderful. And so of course, you know, coming here to the present, we've had I want to ask about the, this is a silly question, but when did the marquee show up? I love marquees, and we love your marquee. And your marquee, I have to say, as a tangential statement, sort of kept us alive during the pandemic, because the messages you would put up there and post, we just loved. So when did that marquee show up?
The earliest incarnation of the marquee, I know it was up for the first Frontera Fest in 92 or 93, I think it was. So it was probably a little before that. I the '80s, sometime in the '80s, but it was a cruder marquee in those days. It was like the one you'd see on the side of the road for like a bar. It said setups, 2-for-1 drinks. One of those,
which is always good.
I was very confused about what setups were when I was a kid. Does that mean they hook you up with a date?
I went through the same thing, and you and I are around the same age, and I don't know if you remember, and this has got nothing to do with theater, but Houston, sometime in the 60s, they voted liquor by the drink.
Yes, I moved
and
there
my parents were like, and I never could understand that, like, how else are you going to drink liquor? I don't get it. Why do you have to vote for that? But back in those days, you would walk into a theater, or into a bar, you had to bring your own bottle.
Yes.
And you would pay for setups, which is the tonic and lime.
Coca-Cola.
Exactly. Yeah. But I just remember being very baffled by that whole thing. But my parents, who were very good drinkers, were... they were very vocal about the liquor by the drink.
Yes, vote. When I first moved to Houston, they had a Jack in the Box, and then they had liquor by the drink.
You know, the theater's plopped in a neighborhood setting, and more so than the other current theaters, like Ground Floor Theater and Vortex, they're not so much in a neighborhood setting. They seem like more in a commercial zone. You are... even though you're right by Guadalupe Street, you still seem like you're tucked into a neighborhood. I'm curious, and over your years, or even before, how involved were you, or was Hyde Park with the neighborhood itself?
Very much so. We've got a great relationship with the Hyde Park Neighborhood Association. I've spoken at several of their meetings, and we hosted one of their board meetings at the theater. They're very, very supportive. The Neighborhood Association is very, very supportive of our existence. And they plug us in their monthly magazine. They've been fantastic. Even before I took over the theater, they were a great ally of the theater.
So moving forward, in theory, we're all getting through this pandemic. What does Hyde Park look 5 years from now as a producing organization? What kind of shows will you be doing? Are there any plans to make major renovations to the space? And how long is Ken Webster going to stay with Hyde Park Theater?
I was asked that in an interview that I boned up on all this history. Frank Binge interviewed me, I guess, 4 years ago.
May he rest in peace.
Yes. He had me speculating when I would step down. I don't know. I think I'll be around for at least a few more years. I really love this place. All through the pandemic, I've come in every day, unless I'm out of town for a funeral or a wedding. Or I'm iced in because of a snowpocalypse last year. That was the only time I did not, besides being out of town on a vacation or something, it was, I think, 5 days in a row that I wasn't able to come to the theater, which drove me crazy. I like to check on the place, even when things are slow. It's also a good place to get your steps in every day on that wide open stage. But we're going to continue to produce great plays, mostly written after 1965. Because of the pandemic, we've started doing a lot of online stuff, which I think we're going to continue to do. And we have a podcast now of short audio plays called HPT Audio Plays that I'm very excited about. And we've got listeners from all over the world and all over the United States. We're very popular in DC for some reason. Suddenly we became very popular there, and I don't know how that happened. And we'll also serve as the performance home of groups like Capital T Theater and Street Corner Arts and others. We also rent on off nights. So we try to rent as much as possible, not just Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, which are basically booked until the end of time, pandemic allowing. But yeah, we're gonna continue doing new works and trying to pay actors a decent wage and designers a decent wage, bringing back Frontera Fest, which I you can imagine how much I miss Frontera Fest, Short Fringe, Long Fringe, and Mi Casa Es Tu Teatro.
Yep. Do you have any? So the theater itself is pretty small. Do you have any desire to change the footprint of this theater in any way, shape, or form?
It used to be more difficult to conceive of that because we had something in here all the time. We're a little limited on increasing the seating capacity, and I kind of like that. One of the great things about the small capacity is we don't have to do Neil Simon. We don't have to do Broadway shows. We're more like the off-Broadway of Austin. I like having a theater that's so intimate where if you're on the back row, you're 22 feet away from the stage. I love that. I love that it's an intimate space. We'll do some, we continue to improve our lighting equipment inventory, getting LEDs and things like that. We've got a great light board now. The main thing is just continuing to do great work and provide a home for people who don't have one.
So as artistic director, do you have, is there a piece that you're just dying to do sometime in the future that you'd like to share with the audience?
I've been so lucky. I've gotten to do so many of the plays that I've always wanted to do. There's a new Annie Baker play that hasn't opened in New York yet. It was postponed because of the pandemic. That sounds really exciting. I'm interested in that one. There's a play that I won't name the title of the play. Is one that Megan Thornton, the artistic director, the literary manager, and I.
You just about. Fired yourself.
I just fired myself and appointed Megan. It's a play that we wanted to do, but now somebody else is doing it before us. But it would have been a cool play to do. It's currently postponed. So who knows? Never say never.
I wonder if it's the same play that I wanted to do that is also currently postponed, but is planning to be doing as well. We can talk when we're not recording. I'm glad that you mentioned Megan, because I did want to talk about you have a lot of currently, and I think this is in good part to Megan, playwriting circles and working with a lot of playwrights to do playwriting readings and things like that. And as you mentioned, Megan Thornton is your literary manager. I don't know what her actual title is.
That is it.
Is that something that is relatively new in terms of working with playwrights to help them develop their own work?
It is new. This really started in earnest when she after she showed up as literary manager. I mean, there's always been Frontera Fest, which is a great avenue for local playwrights to get their work seen. But our playwright groups that we've done have been fantastic. And this podcast, HPT Audio Plays, has been great. We've been able to hire a bunch of different writers, writers of color, actors of color, directors of color. So even though we produced almost nothing in person in 2000 and 2001, we produced a lot of content, and we were able to pay a lot of artists and get a lot of new voices being heard, whether it was online stage readings or these audio plays that we've been producing. And we've got some in the can right now that are going to be dropping soon. We've got some by Adrian Dawes that are coming up, two plays by Adrian Dawes, and one by Taji Senior. I just listened to the second Adrian Dawes play today, which is fantastic, and I can't wait for people to be able to hear that.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And so my last question, my final question for you is, as we are looking at the theater community here in Austin as a whole, on a scale of 1 to 10, I mean, how optimistic are you about the theater community here thriving and coming back to life post-pandemic?
I'm very optimistic. I've been off and on a little pessimistic. You know, things look like it's over, and then it's not quite over yet. But I'm feeling pretty confident that our April rental shows are going to happen with Street Corner Arts and Scriptworks, and then we're going to be producing a play. I'm not announcing what it is yet, but I think you'd be excited. That is going to happen in May, June. And I'm hoping things are going to be okay for the rest of the calendar year. And then, hopefully for the near future, that, audiences will be, feel comfortable coming out. We're still going to be, we'll be masked for a while. Maybe eventually that won't be a thing. But, and it may take a while, but I think in the long term, I'm very optimistic about, Austin Theater, returning, to what it once was and beyond.
Well, great. Well, Ken Webster, we're really happy that you joined us here, on Offstage on the Air. I love that Hyde Park exists, and I love that I learned just a little bit more, about the Hyde Park Theater and its, history, which I did not know before. And I think our listeners will enjoy that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Sitting on my stoop.
Sitting on my stoop.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Ooh, ooh.
Sitting on my stoop.
Sitting on my stoop.
Webster Avenue.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Sit in- Webster Avenue. I didn't mean to cut that off so quickly, but I did. So there it is. We are back. I did not do a very good job of timing this out. I thought that interview was a lot longer. So we have 10 extra minutes to spend together with nothing planned. But I will go over some of the other stuff that I was going to talk about that we did not have time for. But I really did enjoy my time with Ken Webster and enjoyed learning about Hyde Park Theater. I was really hoping to get his predecessor on, but I was not able to get a hold of her. Maybe someday we will have her on and talk more about that. I will also say our next interview in our series on longstanding theaters is I just spoke to the folks over at Teatro Vivo and talked about how they started. They came on the scene around 2000, and we'll spend some time talking to them, Joanne and Rupert, who started it, and then we will move on and speak to Oscar, who is running it currently in its new edition. After that, I'm hoping to talk to Spectrum and get a little insight on Pro Arts Collective, which then turned into Spectrum after Boyd Vance passed away. So there's a lot of really rich knowledge here in Austin, Texas on the theater scene. And I'm going to try to tap into a little bit of that. I would like to say while we're here is that we are having our membership drive starting this coming Friday here at Co-op. And you can go to koop.org right now and donate now, or you can wait till the membership drive starts. And we will be having our membership drive a week from today on Wednesday, and we will enjoy ourselves and we will ask you to dig out your pocketbooks and support your local community radio station that is working for you. And I have been doing this show for 13 years. I haven't been paid a penny for it, except I get paid in the gratitude that I get from you, the listener. And when you support this theater, you are supporting theater. When you support this radio station, you are supporting Ground Floor Theater. So do it. KOOP.org. Make a donation now or wait till Wednesday and donate during the show. There was another off-Broadway show that opened up. It's a show called English, written by Sanaz Tuzi. I know that I probably didn't do his name or their name very well, but that such is life. The little tagline is, four Iranians and their language teacher find second themselves in a second tongue. And it's all about learning English. And actually, it's very interesting. There was a test that folks had to take, and I'm going to try to find it in my notes. I, of course, didn't write it down, so I can't give you the test. But this show is a cooperation between the Atlantic and the Roundabout Theater Companies. It opened last Tuesday. Yesterday at the Linda Gross Theater in New York City. And it's a very interesting show. It's been made a critic's pick, and it deals with these people trying to learn English. And they do a very interesting thing. I should say that the show itself is broken up into 22 scenes that represent different lessons that they are taking on. And when they are speaking in the class and they are speaking English, and I'm using air quotes when I say they're speaking English, the actors are speaking in a heavy Iranian accent. When they are speaking Farsi, on the other hand, they are speaking in basically a no-accented English. So that's an interesting way to show the difference in language. So it was directed by Knud Adams, and it underlines a calm, classical rhythm in Toosey's writing. So basically all good in the... did they like it? They had 4 thumbs up and 1 thumbs down. I'm going to read the little blurb here. 2 words set in motion, award-winning playwright Senez Toosey's intricate and profound New York debut, English Only. This is the mantra that rules the classroom in Iran, where 4 adult students are preparing for the TOEFL. That's the test I was talking about, TOEFL. It's the test of English as a foreign language. Chasing fluency through a maze of word games, listening exercise, and show-and-tell sessions, they hope that one day English will make them whole, but it might be splitting them each in half. Sounds fascinating, and this play route sounds fascinating as well. You can get information, click and see the link to Did They Like It at offstageonair.com. There's another show that I cannot say on the radio, but it's called, where is it? I lost the name. Oh, there it is. Sorry. It's called Effing Identical Twins. And it is, it's in production with the Borat director, and Seinfeld alum Larry Charles at the helm. And it stars Nathan Lane and Megan Thee Stallion. Now, I have to say that I'm not as up on my hip-hop stars as I should be. And I've heard the name Megan Thee Stallion quite a bit, thinking that it was Megan the T-H-E Stallion. But it's not. It's Megan T-H-E-E Stallion, Megan Thee Stallion, and it's a musical comedy, Effing Identical Twins. It's in production, or it's in concept stage. Oh, it's going to be I think it is going to be a film. I'm sorry, I didn't do enough good homework. So that looks like an interesting thing. The other thing I want to say is it was announced several weeks ago, that New York Artists in Need can apply for a $1,000 a month grant. And I just want to applaud the city of New York for really helping their artist class and the creative class that have truly been struggling over this past 2 years. And I would argue that we've been struggling prior to that. Creative class and arts are the first that many governments want to cut funding to, and it's very difficult, if not impossible, in many towns. New York, Austin is one of those, for artists to make a living in their craft. So I applaud New York for doing that. $1,000 a month, certainly you're not going to retire on that, but it will certainly pay the bills. That's like half of a New York City rent. Really probably more like a quarter of New York City rent, but let's just assume you have roommates. But that's a real good, and I applaud New York and their support of 2,400 artists. And that's actually, sorry, that's not the city, that is the state. So if those artists can demonstrate financial need, they can get that grant of $1,000 a month. That's very, very good and generous. Well, there it is. You've spent an hour with us here at Offstage and On the Air. DJ Mark just coming through the door right now, ready and raring to go, ready to steal this microphone away from us and have Texas Music Mixtape here on KOOP. We will see you next week. It's membership drive next week, so get out your pocketbooks and get ready to be generous. Remember, you can do it now at koop.org. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. And I'm going to go back to that song we were playing about Ken Webster, Webster Avenue. We'll see you later, folks. Bye.
Got a love of you, ooh, ooh, Webster ooh. Avenue.